And I want to welcome Andy Reid to come and speak. Andy and his wife, Lina, who's here with him, are members of the Marlow congregation. Andy's on the River Central Leadership Team. I want to commend Andy to you this morning, not just because Andy is a great communicator. He can, as they say, talk the talk. I want to commend Andy to you and honour him this morning as a man who has walked the walk with God. And that's why he can talk the talk.
Thanks, Chris. He's risen. He is risen. And that isn't just objective historical truth, although, as I will explain, that's also fairly important and quite remarkable. But it is truth that impacts us, every single one of us. Paul, in his letter to the Ephesians, puts it like this. He's just been talking about Jesus being raised. And then he talks about the mess that all of us were in outside of God. And then he says, but God. But God. Who is rich in mercy. Because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you've been saved, and raised us up together, and made us sit together in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus, that in ages to come he might show the exceeding riches of his grace in his kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. For by grace you've been saved. He's risen, so we can be raised. But God. Over the last few weeks in this congregation, there's been a theme running called The Big Story, and Colin Barnes, who heads up the leadership of River Church as a whole, has been taking you through the great unfolding story that is unwrapped in the pages of the Bible, from Genesis through to Revelation. The big story, God's story, his story, his story. And because he's been doing that in quite short slots, it's been a bit of a whistle-stop tour, I'm sure, but he has painted that entire picture. Today, we are just pausing, really, at what is a crescendo in that story. The greatest plot twist ever, if you like. In the big story. And we've called this end or beginning because it was circumstances that looked as if it had to be just an end. It looked like this was the end of the big story. And yet, but God. And it's perhaps an indictment of this kind of instant, move on quickly society that we're in, or perhaps it's just an indictment of me. But I spent some time this week pondering about talking this morning and actually thinking, what new thing should I say about Easter? And then realised how ridiculous that is. That we should need something new to say about the greatest event, the greatest plot twist, the greatest, most engaging fact in all of his story. That Jesus, the Son of God made flesh, would come, would take upon himself all the rubbish in our existence, would die, and then be raised from the dead and be alive. That sounds like quite an important thing that I shouldn't have to think of something new to say about. Night before last, I watched with my family Skyfall, the latest James Bond movie, and I was watching that for the third time. And it was still good, but can I just say that it was just beginning to get, great movie though it was beginning to get a little bit old. Like, I knew he was going, plot spoiler coming up, by the way, fingers in ears if you've not watched this movie. I kind of knew he was going to get shot on the roof of the train in the opening sequence, you know? Actually, that's in the trailer, I think, so that's fine. And I knew what was going to happen at the end with... No, just in case you haven't watched it. But how could they do that? Anyway, great movie though it was, it after three times it begins to get a bit old. This is the greatest story that we've just seen. And it never gets old. And yet, as I often say about stories in the Bible, we are looking at them from this perspective, looking back. We know the end of the story. They didn't. And it really did look like an end, a full stop. Peter and probably John, he's a bit coy in his own book at saying, it was me, but it probably was him. Peter and John come running to the tomb after what sounded like a really disturbing report from Mary and what's going on. Understand, they are not expecting to come and see a risen Jesus. You know, all of these kind of explanations about Easter Sunday all being down to wish fulfillment and all of that, they weren't expecting this. The first one there, John, is too frightened to even go in the tomb. Peter, who, as we know from other stories, always tends to think with his feet, runs on in. But he doesn't understand it. And it says they believed, but if you then look at what happens next, what that seems to mean is they believed that the tomb was empty. But they don't understand it. There is fear. They are coming to this situation with huge disappointment. All of their hopes for the last 3 years seemingly shattered in the last few days. For them, this seems to be an end. And it says they go back home, which doesn't really seem like the actions of people who are now believing for a whole new beginning in life. This is business as usual. We don't understand it. We don't understand why the body's missing. Why are they making things even worse in this way? But all we can do is go home. It seemed like the end, but God. And actually, but a woman as well. Because the blokes, great men of faith and power for the hour, they go home. And the woman, obviously too emotionally driven to hold any position of leadership in any respectable religion, stays. But even she doesn't really understand to start with. She thinks that the body's been stolen. She thinks it's a case of grave robbery. She is weeping and she is in despair. And I really, really like the way they portrayed this in the video. And I think, in a wonderful way, unravel something that might puzzle people. Because why doesn't Mary recognized Jesus straight away? Well, actually, the way they portrayed that seemed very true to life to me. There is Mary weeping and in despair, and she's just aware there's someone behind her, and she kind of half turns, but she's weeping and she's upset. She doesn't really look at who it is, and isn't that what you would kind of do? You're embarrassed to be in this state. and caught up with grief, she thought it was an end. But God. And God at that point in Jesus says, Mary, he speaks to her. And at a point where we might think things are at an end, maybe even this morning for some of us, we're at the end of ourselves, God will speak, and he calls us not just generally, but he calls us by name. And at that point for Mary, the despair is replaced by just the glimmer of a hope that causes her to turn around and actually look him in the face. I don't think in that fraction of a second everything was clear to her, but she heard her name, and that glimmer of hope caused her to look in the face of Christ and recognize who he was. That isn't something just unique to Mary. That can be true, has been true for so many of us, can be true for all of us. But God, at a point where things had reached an end, but God makes Mary just aware that maybe, just maybe, there could be a beginning here instead of an end, as she recognizes Jesus for who he is. She doesn't actually understand everything at that point. It's true for all of us, isn't it? When we first recognize Jesus for who he is, we didn't understand everything and still don't. Well, I don't. But we do see who he is, and that's enough for us to recognize that there is the possibility of a new beginning. At which point, I just want to kind of talk a little bit about how religion would sometimes see this story. I'm not a great Robbie Louis Stevenson fan, but there is this quote here: to travel, hopefully, is a better thing than to arrive. Now, I have to tell you, I was first made aware of this quote, not in a book of the writings of Robbie Louis Stevenson or by Googling for the quote, but which I did later, but actually in a book by C.S. Lewis. And it's a parable, an extended parable called The Great Divorce. Anyone read that book by C.S. Lewis? One or two? Oh, golly, it's people of a certain age, isn't it, really? But there we go. Well, this parable, allegory, call it what you will, is C.S. Lewis painting a picture of people going on a day excursion from heaven to hell to talk to people there. And one of the characters encounters a bishop. He actually is, but could be anyone. But it is a bishop who is not in heaven. And he is rather offended, this character, by the whole idea that is being presented to him that he isn't in a perfect place and that he is, in fact, in hell. And the person kind of is trying to, from heaven, who's trying to explain to him, you know, can't you recognize where you are? Can't you recognize what truth is and so on? And he somewhat loftily sort of dismisses the idea of absolute truth and says, but surely to travel hopefully is a better thing than to arrive. And there would be those who would want to view the Easter story as being something totally shrouded in mystery. And of course, it's the allegorical and spiritual truth that's the most important. And let's travel, hopefully, with this wonderful idea of new life and bunnies and chicks and daffodils. Now, Please understand me. There is mystery in our faith. As I just said, I wouldn't pretend to understand everything. Well, not pretend to understand many things, actually. But in the midst of that which is mystery, our faith as followers of Jesus is actually founded upon something very concrete. And please understand me, if you are at a stage of journeying in what you understand, what you believe, I am in no way dismissing that. But there is a destination on this journey. And Paul, in one of his other letters to the people in Corinth, makes it very, very clear that at the centre of our faith, there isn't something vague about whether it is an end or whether it is a beginning. There is something very concrete. He puts it like this in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. If Christ is not risen, then our preaching is empty and your faith is also empty. That's fairly definite, I think. There's not a lot of travelling, hopefully being better than to arrive in that statement. Paul has just been listing all the people who saw Jesus alive, and it is a pretty impressive list. It says that he was seen by Peter, then he was seen by the 12, and then he was seen by over 500 people at once, of whom the greater part, at the time he was writing, were still alive. And after that, he was seen by James, and then all the apostles, and then actually Paul says he saw him himself. Paul lists the fact that this is not just some spiritual truth that is kind of true in some vague way. Maybe let's leave it open. Is this an end? Is this a beginning? No. Jesus rose and is risen. And if that is not true, then when he died, he died. And there is no hope for us. And our faith, as he puts it so clearly, is empty. But, Paul goes on to say, it's not empty because he is risen. But God, in a situation that looks like it's impossible, God shows up. And we are those who, if we are followers of Jesus, are those who embrace the impossible but true. And today is a day of celebrating the impossible but true. In the midst of impossible situations, in the midst of dark situations, God can show up, and we know that because in the darkest situation of all, he showed up and Jesus rose from the grave, and with that opened up the possibility of us rising to new life in him, as I read at the beginning. Just before I show you the next slide, I do want to just warn you that there is an image on the slide of somebody who is disfigured through a disease. And if you, in all seriousness, if you are upset by images like that, you might want to just avert your gaze over to that corner of the room for a minute or two while I show the slide. It's not that bad, but I did feel I ought to warn you. This is Lakshmaya. Lakshmaya is someone I met a couple of weeks ago in India. Lakshmaya is someone who suffers from leprosy. Yes, leprosy is a disease that still exists. It's not just something that happened in the Bible. It shouldn't still exist because it is treatable at the early stage by antibiotics. But in one or two countries, that doesn't happen. And Lakshmaya is someone I met in a colony of people. A colony in very simple dwellings next to a rubbish dump in southern India. And Lakshmaya, along with the other people in that colony, is given by the government their 200 rupees a month to live. That's just a little under £3. So they can't survive on that, so they have to beg for what else they have. But God. Now, this is where some of the mystery comes in. You know, what Lakshmaya is a follower of Jesus, along with actually most of the people in that colony. And what was meant to be a community building built by the government has been kind of co-opted to be a church. And that's where we met with them. Why aren't they healed? I don't know. But here's something about Lakshmaya that you should know. See, Paul wrote elsewhere in 1 Corinthians, God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. The person who took me and my travelling companions to meet Lakshmaya and his friends told me that when she has something that she is facing that she particularly wants prayer for, this is where she comes. And the person who she entrusts to pray for her situation more than anybody else is Lakshmaya. Do you think Lakshmaya's prayers get heard? I kind of think they do. Actually, we witnessed that. There was a situation on the morning that we visited. One of the people I was traveling with had just had a text from home to say that a young man in his church was very sick. And we told the community there about that. And for 10 minutes, they prayed with passion for this young man. I got an email yesterday from Janaki, who took us to the community. And she said, the people in this community are praying for you, Andy. I feel very supported right now. Now, I'm not saying that God caused this, but God turns these things around. And in a situation of great darkness, and it is a situation of darkness, I don't want to pretty it up in any way. They need not just our prayer, they also need our resources. And that's not what I'm here to say. But in a situation of great darkness, God turns things around. And here is a but God. What looks like an end is actually a beginning in an amazing way. Resurrection, Jesus rising from the dead, means there is hope in a hopeless situation for Lakshmaya. Doesn't answer all the questions, doesn't solve all the problems. But there is hope in a way that there could not have been hope. And so I'm going to finish. And Scott, could you just come and play something? And actually Ewan as well. That'd be great. Today is a day of celebration. Sometimes we find it difficult to express what's inside of us, but today is a day of celebration. One of the songs we sang said, this is the greatest day in history. It's the greatest part of the big story. It is the plot twist to end all plot twists, and it's the reason why we have hope. It's the reason, Paul says very clearly in 1 Corinthians 15, that it is worth us turning up here at all. Otherwise, it is all empty. But it isn't empty. But God. And maybe, I don't know everyone in this room, so I can say this, maybe for some people here, you are on that journey yourself. Well, just maybe now is a time to commit further in that journey. Maybe you know people on a journey in faith, and feel actually maybe this would be a time for them to commit more on that journey. Commit to finding out what is the truth of all of this. On your chairs, at the back, on the display, there's these postcards which are about the Alpha course that we're about to run, starting on the 24th of April. The details are all on the card. If you yourself want to pursue this journey further, or you know someone like that, why not take one of these cards and commit to doing something about that? To see whether an end can be converted to a beginning. Maybe you've done all that and you've done the exploring and you're just a bit like John on the outside of that tomb. You're just not sure whether to go in or not, and you're not sure what you're going to find, and you're not sure what you're going to do with it if you do find it. Maybe today is a day to go in, to see the empty tomb, and to commit to the truth that this is not the end, but it is a beginning. And you can know that for yourself. And as Paul said in those verses that I read out at the beginning, it's not just the objective truth that Jesus has been raised from the dead and raised in new life, but you today can be raised from the mess that you know you're in and raised to new life. Like Mary, you don't need to understand it all, but he is right now speaking your name to you. So will you turn and face him? And if that is you, we'd love to pray with you. You can do that where you're sitting, but it's often helpful just for someone to pray with you and kind of help you acknowledge that step that you're taking. So there will be people at the front able to pray with you. Maybe for many others, if we're honest, we know there are situations where we've reached the end of ourselves. And it feels like an end. This morning, there can be a "but God" moment for you. And new hope can come. And that doesn't, I'm really not promising that all the problems disappear. They haven't disappeared for Lakshmaya. But the truth of "but God" means that new hope can come even in the midst of that situation. And again, there are people who'd love to pray with you and help cement that moment. Let me just pray, and I'm going to hand back to Chris. Father, I want to thank you. This is a story that's never old, but it's always new. Because there's always a new situation that you're wanting to come in and speak our name and bring new life. Father, we are those who dare to embrace the impossible but true, who dare to believe that the God of the universe will be present here in this room, because you are. And I want to pray, Lord, for each one of us and myself, Lord, that we would leave this place, this physical place, in a new place in you. Fresh revelation that we are raised to new life in you. Whatever situation we've come into carrying, that we would go away from here being raised to new life in you.